1340 WNBS.com presents the Neil Bradley Show, your expanded look at local and regional sports with weekly guests or experts in their field. With today's show, here's Neil Bradley.
Hello and welcome to the program. Ed Marlowe in today. Tonight, Ohio Valley Conference play begins. Murray State will play Morehead State in a men's women's doubleheader. That's one of a full slate of games as we have Martin at Eastern Illinois, Tennessee Tech at Tennessee State, SEMO at SIU Edwardsville, Eastern Kentucky at Austin Peay, Jacksonville State at Belmont. And this is when things get interesting because the Racers went 9-2. Morehead State not as good in their non-conference play against a tough schedule, 4-9. But tonight, none of that matters, Ed. To get to where each of these teams want to be, which is the number one seed in Evansville in the OVC tournament, it all begins tonight.
Yeah, I don't want to say none of it matters, but none of it really matters. For the OVC, it absolutely matters now. But a lot of your non-conference slate really is. There's a lot of different reasons non-conference slates even exist. Yeah, I mean, you're trying to make a little money. You're trying to learn about your team. You're trying to practice everything you have in your playbook. And you're trying to win some games. And I don't mean that at all. So now that both teams have kind of worked out all of their kinks, it's time to put it up against an 18-game slate. And here we are. I think it's absolutely crazy that this much time has even passed. I mean, we've already had 11 to 13 games across the country that the season has already moved along this quickly. But tonight, the Racers have already overcome some adversity. They've already had to deal with an injury to Anthony Smith. Getting a lot of balanced play out of the front court, getting some great play out of the back court for sure. It starts with Ja Morant, but he is not alone. Shaq Buchanan and Tevin Brown have certainly put their mark on their, I guess, roles on this team. And it goes up tonight against Morehead State, which I think it should be a great contest. I don't think this is going to be kind of a walk-away kind of laugher. Morehead State always seems to come in. I feel like the last 4 years, every time Murray State and Morehead State have played, it's been anywhere between to a...
Yeah.
Well, 2 years ago at Morehead State, it was the buzzer beater in overtime.
And last year, we were about to blow them out, I thought. And then, Hicks got hot or whoever it was.
Yeah.
And suddenly, it's a ball game again.
Right. And the Racers end up winning 87-81. So, I mean, it's just... That's conference play, though. That's the one thing that I've always really liked about conference play. Like, I mean, even last year, SIU Edwardsville, when they backed themselves back into the OVC tournament, they still gave the Racers a little bit of a fight at Edwardsville. Now, in Murray, it didn't exactly go their way. But in Edwardsville, that was just kind of a sluggish game, which... You know that trip as well as anybody.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's tough to win at EIU and at SIU Edwardsville on back-to-back nights. But, swing. But, I mean, that's what I like about conference play, is that it really is just about matchups and winning specific categories. Tonight, if the Racers win, they will have won two or three very specific categories. And it's like a chess match. That's what I like so much about OVC play.
And each team knows basically everything the other team is going to do and has ever done. They know that the Racers aren't going to come out and play 1-3-1 zone all night. They know they're not going to see that. They're not going to try to play deliberate and beat you 58-56. They know everything about it. The Racers know everything about Morehead State. And that's what makes it difficult, is to try to win when you know everything, every good and every bad thing that the other team can do, which you don't have as much of. Even though there's film, you just don't have as much of a feel when you're playing non-conference games.
Right. And the thing about it is, too, obviously one of the things that makes conference play is exciting is when you do come up with a wrinkle. It's like a special play. Belmont's got them. Jacksonville State's got them. Belmont's especially got them. I mean, the backdoor cut is real in the Rick Bird system. But, you know, you take a look at, from a general standpoint, yes, Morehead State and Murray State aren't going to come to the table with a plethora of new ideas. But I would imagine there are a couple, like, sneaky things in the back pocket.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I think one thing for the Racers, and I wrote about it today, and I'm sure we'll write more about it, you know, as the season moves along. But one of the things that I think really has not been talked a lot about with Racer basketball this season is just the amount of utility at the post position. I understand guys like Breon Sanctius maybe aren't putting together the stat numbers that you would expect out of a senior power forward, you know, but he is the team's best blocker and screener. Okay, well, let's move forward. Darnell Cowart, he's probably the best free throw shooter out of the four forwards. You know, he's 22 for 32. That clip has really improved over the last two or three games. And you're starting to see more minutes out of him for a reason. He's lost almost 40 pounds.
Yeah, yeah.
It's 20% of me. That's a lot of weight that he's really cut off. Now, it's not Popeye Jones-esque. Popeye lost a lot more, but it's the same kind of work ethic. That's the same kind of work they put into Popeye all those years ago to get him to lose that kind of weight. Then you've got a guy in KJ Williams who's been as hot as anybody on the team. I mean, he's 22 for 30 in the last six games since he's entered into about 15 to 17 minutes of playing time. Got the start against Bethel. He's definitely showing, you know, a lot of improvement. And then we haven't even mentioned Mike Davis, who had five starts for Anthony following Anthony's unfortunate season-ending injury. And I'd say of the four forwards, he's probably the best passing forward. Mm-hmm. He's got nine assists, and he has 8 3-pointers. So he's showcasing a little bit of his type of game. So I don't know. I mean, maybe your thoughts on that. This is a very utilitarian front court that I seem to see over the first 11 games.
Well, the thing that I think you'll see, and we haven't seen yet, I've seen everything. Tevin Brown hasn't surprised me offensively, not a shock. Basically, we talked about that. I thought he'd be the impact player as far as the newcomers for the Racers. And I put him in the newcomer category because no playing time basically last year. His defense has really surprised me big time. KJ Williams had shocked me in how good he is offensively as a freshman. Normally, your big men, when you get them at the OVC level, not as good as a freshman. You hope that by the time they're a junior, you got them to where they can really contribute. Now, really, all you have to do is teach him to be better defensively, rebound a little bit more consistently, and you got it. But the guy that I think will be the second half impact player will be Mike Davis. He's a great shooter. He's just not shooting it great. He will. His track record is he's going to shoot it. When he starts making them, big weapon off the bench. You got a big dude at 6'7" that's going to knock down 40% or more from three-point range. Hasn't done it yet, but it's coming.
Well, I don't necessarily disagree with you. He's Terrell Miller without dreads. Look at his body. I mean, he's that same size, and he's not necessarily as bulky as Terrell. Terrell was a solid, legitimate 6'8", 240. I think Mike Davis probably is more of a 6'7", 225 type of guy. But, I mean, this is a guy of the four, he's probably rebounding the best, just from a percentage standpoint.
Sure.
I know Cowart's kind of in that mix as well, but I mean, Mike Davis is averaging 4 or 5 rebounds a game. Now, the one thing that Matt has mentioned, and it's something that he needs this front court to really do on a more consistent basis, and that's hit the defensive glass. Because right now it's the backcourt hitting the defensive glass since Anthony's gone down. You've got three guys in Ja, Tevin, and Shaq that are all averaging 5 rebounds or more per game since Anthony's injury. That's great. Wonderful. You'd love for any backcourt to be averaging 16 rebounds a game or more, you know, to help alleviate any front court woes or to even create transition offense. I'm of a firm notion that transition offense best occurs when your guards are the ones rebounding. I know a lot of people complain, get frustrated, you know, find it silly that your power forwards aren't rebounding as well as they do. Well, in Murray State's offense, you want the guards getting the ball right out of the gate because they're going to meet you down at the other end and they're going to dunk it, hit a transition three, or find a guy like Breon Sanctius or Darnell Cowart streaking down the sideline for an alley-oop dunk. It's just part of it. That's a faster way to run the offense. However, you need your big men to really clean up the defensive glass. Let the offensive rebounding go to guards who have softer touch. And that's what McMahon is looking for coming into the conference slate. Your big men rebounding on the defensive glass a lot more effectively than they have been over the last 3 weeks.
Tonight's challenge with Morehead State, kind of a three-headed monster, if you will, with Jordan Walker, their leading scorer, 6-foot junior, 15 a game. A.J. Hicks, 12.3 a game. He also is 6 feet. The only big guy they have that scores tremendously tremendously is Lamontre Harris, 12.8, but he's capable of a 20-point night. So those are all good. They don't have a really deep bench. They do bring Malik Green off the bench, 6'7 sophomore, 8.6. And then Jamin Henson, who averages 5.6 per game, but they don't go really much beyond that. They don't shoot the three particularly well. They don't defend it particularly well, but they rebound okay, put up about 75 points per game. They're a solid team. They don't really have an area where they excel, but they don't have a really weak area either, Ed.
No, they don't. And I'm glad you mentioned the rebounding. Their rebounding totals aren't particularly overwhelming, but they really have a propensity for the offensive glass. They're second in the OVC on total offensive rebounds. They do a really, really, really good job of crashing the glass. We've known this since the beginning of college basketball. It's what Morehead State's always been known for. It doesn't matter who's been coaching the program. For some strange reason, I feel like every coach that's ever coached, Tindall, Sean Woods, you know, now it's Preston Spradlin. It's like, we're going to go get offensive boards. We're going to go get them, and no one else is going to go get them. They're really good at that. I think they're averaging, close to 14, 15 yeah. offensive rebounds a game. That's one of the tougher places the Racers have had since Anthony's injury, because Anthony was one of the best percentage offensive rebounding percentage guys in the country over the last, you know, those first five or six games. So it just ends up being one of those things where, we'll see how it goes. The glass is going to be extremely important tonight, and that ends up being one of those categories that I think the Racers have to win tonight.
Have the game on the air, 6:45 on Froggy. The Racer women kicks things off. That'll be tonight at the 5 o'clock tip-off, 4:30 the airtime. That's on 104.5 WBZB. Morehead with a really terrific player in Miranda Crockett, an OVC preseason player of the year candidate, but they also have added Rutgers transfer Leah June, 22 points, hit 5 of 6 three-pointers last week. This is a loaded team. Unless something goes south with them injury-wise, a certain 20-win team that could challenge for the OVC tournament championship.
They could very well, and that's the other thing, too. You talk about a Morehead State team that's got the two top, you know, the top two scorers in the conference, and you know, and the number three scorer is Evelyn Adebayo from Murray State. So you know, it's a fun matchup. The one thing that I will say, I want to dial it back just a scotch before the Racers, you know, take on Morehead State tonight. One of the big things for them is over these last 2 weeks, right before Christmas and right after Christmas, you know, they've been ultimately challenged by Kentucky and Tennessee, two top 15, top 20 programs. I think Tennessee was 10th when they played them, and Kentucky was 18th when the Racers played them. It was an ultimate challenge for them to go on the road, learn trial by fire, so to speak. Now all of a sudden it turns to OVC play, but it might not get any easier because Morehead State, you know, this is a team that Rochelle has been pumping up for the last 18 months. She saw it coming last year. She has mentioned it this year that Morehead State should be one of the top teams in the conference. So it is an ultimate challenge right out of the gate for Murray State. Luckily, they get them at home, and we'll see if the defense can counteract.
I think Morehead, they looked at film of the Tennessee game. They saw Evelyn Adebayo and went, okay, we're not going to stop her. They're not going to let her have the points, but she's probably going to get 24, 23. There's nothing we can do about it. They need to be sure that the other Racer players don't have big nights, because that's the key. If the others, you get Lex, you get Macy, any of the others starting to make shots, and suddenly this is where the team goes. And I like the way that Rochelle had the schedule. They've really been ultimately tested, and tonight will be a huge test against a Morehead State team, because they're not going to face anybody better in the OVC than they faced over the last 2 weeks.
No, not at all. And I think the one thing, too, that's been so, I say these things, the three hasn't really fallen for the Racers, but they've taken, is the third, I mean, I say this, they're fifth in the conference in percentage. I mean, 31.6% from three, not great, but not terrible.
They'll be a lot better than that, I think.
I do too, and that's what I keep thinking. Like, these are the threes that are going to be falling at some point once they get the offense really tinkered out. I mean, Lex Mays started the season shooting 55% from three in the first five games. She's capable of that. Macy Turley is not going to shoot 25% from three for the rest of the season. It just isn't going to happen.
No.
You know, Evelyn Adebayo, And Alexis Burpo are your two best three-point shooters right now, percentage-wise, and they're likely going to improve. So I just don't see they're third lowest in takes and fifth in makes, percentage-wise. I see those numbers starting to trend the other way. Based on how tough it's been for this schedule, I just feel like there's going to come a time where the Racers really scorch the Nets from three, and it's going to make a difference.
Now, tonight, let's take a look at the rest of the schedule. On the men's side, the game of the night, and of course, we always think it's the Racer game, but it really isn't. League-wise, Jacksonville State at Bellemont, it's the ESPNU game, one of the top contenders for the league title. To me, there's four. There's Austin Peay, Belmont, Jacksonville State, Murray State. Those are the top four right now. Unless someone else creeps in there, yeah, of course, that can certainly always happen. But one of the top contenders will be taking a loss tonight.
Yeah, and if I'm Belmont, I'm terrified because Jacksonville State's defense might be a scotch better than Murray State's points per game and percentage-wise. It's been pretty effective this year. They have finally started to string together a few games. They played Wichita State and West Virginia close on the road. They do have a couple tough losses, but they've really kind of turned a corner over the last two or three weeks. Also, Jacksonville State beat Belmont at Belmont last year. So that's certainly something that Belmont's thinking about. Don't get me wrong. And I think Belmont probably is poised to come away with a big home win. But if there's any team that has the moxie and the memory of last year's win in the Curb Center, it would be Jacksonville State. I mean, they've done it. They've been there. They've been to Nashville. They were able to top Belmont in their home court, which is one of the toughest places in the country to win. And so, you know, it's a huge game. If you're not watching Murray State Moorhead tonight and you're just interested in the OVC race, it starts out hot and heavy in Nashville tonight.
Now, Saturday night, the Racers, since we won't be on before we talk about the Racers' next game, it's Eastern Kentucky. They're 7-6 heading into tonight's game, and they went 4-2 in December. They didn't play very badly at Xavier. They did end up losing by 18. Lost an overtime game at Duquesne, and then put up 145. It was against Prussia, but still it's 145 points. So they come in off a really good month.
They also come in fairly healthy, at least as coming into tonight. Pedro Bradshaw, that originally was committed and signed and on Belmont's campus, is now qualified, transferred, sat out, and has dealt with some injury. He's now back. I don't know how much of the rotation he'll see for Hamilton's club moving forward, but he was a pretty touted recruit out of Russellville High School here in Kentucky. He's a pretty good athlete, but the main athlete we've got to talk about with Eastern Kentucky is the main attraction, Nick Mayo. Holy smokes, has he been good. And this is not me. Oh, Nick Mayo is the great, there are four horse, you talk about a four horse race. This is the four horsemen for OVC Player of the Year.
Yeah.
Nick Mayo is in that conversation.
Sure he is.
Terry Taylor, I'm trying to think really quick. Dylan Windler, and then it's John Morant. Those are your four that are clearly in the conversation for OVC Player of the Year. And I really think it's probably going to be between Mayo and Morant now at this point. So Saturday is a marquee matchup between two dudes. But furthermore, it's a great matchup because, and Matt's already mentioned this, McMahon mentioned this earlier this week, Hamilton has brought a new invigorated attitude to Eastern Kentucky basketball. He was a highly touted signee, for Eastern Kentucky for college basketball. There were a lot of people that were like, okay, you know, Hamilton's going to bring it at EKU. He's going to change the culture of the program. You know, a lot of big national pundits were like, oh, wow, Eastern Kentucky's hired, you know, Hamilton and so on and so forth. Figure brought that same kind of like excitement to Austin Peay last year. So yeah, That's what McMahon expects. You know, you've got a rejuvenated and energized Eastern Kentucky club that, despite 7-6, has a couple really nice wins thanks to some Nick Mayo buzzer beaters. So he's had an incredible season already. I know the Racers, if you talk about matchups, and we talked about this earlier about how everybody knows everything. Nick Mayo's one of those guys that's not really played all that well against the Racers. He's had two or three big games, but they haven't come out as wins. So they've kind of let Mayo do his thing and taken everybody else away. We'll see what happens and transpires on Saturday, but I fully expect the Nick Mayo versus John Morant show to be quite special.
All right, OVC play begins tonight for SEC. Their season, I think, starts on Saturday. Kentucky, they get a test the same place where the Racers have had a test, at Alabama. And believe it or not, fans still talking about Kentucky football this week as they get a New Year's Day win. They did make it interesting at the end, but they picked up a big victory in the Citrus Bowl over Penn State. Now they'll move into basketball mode, and I think their fans are much more encouraged than they were 3 weeks ago, thanks to their wins over North Carolina and Louisville in pretty good fashion.
Yeah, I mean, we can talk quickly about UK basketball and football. You talk about New Year's Day. I'm really, really surprised James Franklin didn't go for it there with under 4 minutes.
What do you got to lose? It's not like, well, I'm hurting my national. You're trying to just win a game. That's all it is. If you don't get it, you don't get it.
I mean, it's a big play. It was 4th and 7, so it would have been a tough play call. Don't get me wrong. That's not like a 4th and 2. I'll give them that. At least it's not like, oh, we're not going to go for it on 4th and 2, and we'll just kick the field goal and then hope our defense holds. Mm-hmm. Like, it's 4th and 7, so I get that there's some trepidation there, and you think that maybe if Kentucky, you know, coughs up the football, or you've got all your timeouts plus the 2-minute warning, so you've got some time. I get that. But then Kentucky did what Kentucky needed to do for a couple other wins this season, and they went to Benny Snell. And Snell was able to eat 3.5 minutes off the clock before they had to punt it back with 3 seconds to go. Excellent clock management from Stoops and company. But that game was won in the third quarter when they scored 17 unanswered. That's, you know, that was what ended up happening for Kentucky. They were able to get a major momentum swing coming out of the locker room. And, you know, a tale of quarters. Kentucky won the 1st and 3rd. Penn State won the 2nd and 4th, but it just ended up being enough for Kentucky to come away with its 10th win. First time since 1977, Neil. That's a long time. I was -8. I was -8. How old were you in 77?
Well, it was January of 77, right? So I would have been 21.
21. Okay.
That's right.
All right. Well, you're not that much older than me. It's fine.
No, whatever. Nice
try. But it is crazy to me to think that UK football fans have always had to quickly go watch basketball. Like, you know, 4 or 5 weeks into the season, like, all right, whatever, it's basketball season, we're done.
Yeah.
This time around, not so much. Mm-hmm. They really, like, the Citrus Bowl turnout was outstanding for both programs. It's Penn State. I mean, Penn State, Kentucky, huge draw for that type of a New Year's Day bowl. Furthermore, you're right about Kentucky basketball. In the meantime, while football's been preparing for the Citrus Bowl, basketball has, I don't even want to call it riding the ship. I've been impressed with Kentucky's non-conference slate. Granted, it's not a lot of true road games, but even the neutral games have been pretty solid. The North Carolina game was a great neutral site, things like that. You know, that was a big win. At Louisville, that's a good road win. Apparently, Seton Hall is as advertised, despite their early season struggles, because they were able to knock off St. John's not long after that. So, you know, the loss to Duke, yes, okay, it looks bad. I'm not going to deny it. It looks awful. You can't lose by 30. That's just terrible, you know. But this is a team that's starting to figure out its druthers, figure out how it can play appropriate man-to-man defense. I thought defensively is where you saw the Cats win against Louisville. You talked about 1-3-1 earlier. I hate that defense. Can I just admit that defense is just straight garbage? I guess if
when it works, it's awesome, though.
I guess, but if you have the right personnel, I get it. But I just feel like it's a junk defense. It's like, okay, we know we're not good enough to play you man-to-man, and we know we're not athletic enough to play you in a 3-2 or a 2-3. So we're going to put a 1-3-1 out there, make it look like a stupid plus sign, and we're going to leave one guy camped under the basket, another guy at the top of the key, and then we got three other guys that we just let them roam wherever they want and hopefully create enough havoc in the middle for you to make a mistake. I just don't like it. It just muddies things up. It takes away elite point guard play.
So what? Exactly, that's your job. Try to figure out a way to beat it.
I just don't. It just doesn't look like basketball to me.
I'm fine. And see, that's the reason I detest the NBA. I like varieties of zone, varieties of things. I like making you work for it.
I don't detest the NBA. I
detest watching it, is what I mean.
That's fair.
I just don't like watching it.
Because it really is just a bunch of man-to-man. It's man-to-man playing full court.
And just, it's a individual game and a team game wrapped up in a team.
I'll give you that.
Because you got 15 seconds of team ball. Then after that, you better get going. Somebody's going to have to make a shot.
I'll give you that. And I understand that you're not necessarily scheming at that level anymore. Once you get to the NBA, you're not really scheming against, you got to work out this practice plan. You got to take away Kyrie Irving. Like, no crap. Of course you have to take away Kyrie Irving. He's literally one of the best point guards in the NBA, but you know, and he's going to come off an ISO and hit a jumper on the baseline. Like, you know that. But I don't know. There's just something about the 1-3-1 zone that's just ugly to me. I don't know. I think it looks like resignation. That's what it looks like to me. When I see it on TV, I'm like, oh, that team thinks it can't withstand the other team's man-to-man
play. We won't see much 1-3-1. Tevin Brown. Corner three kills 1-3-1.
Absolutely it does, because it leaves it completely wide open.
So you got that baseline. Guy, you can't play it very long. You throw it out there occasionally. You just can't play him.
Yeah, because even if he shoots, say he shoots 3-for-9 for the rest of the year, 3-for-9 is still enough to take away a 1-3-1.
Yeah.
I mean, you shoot 33% and you're making corner threes like that, you're right. I mean, that's what the 1-3-1 does. It leaves the perimeter wide open. And I just don't, you know, if you shoot 35% from three or better, 1-3-1 is the worst defense I think you could play against a team. But I mean, what do I know? I don't play the game. I don't coach the game. I barely get paid enough to write about the game.
All
so.
Right. National championship Monday night. Is it going to be a contest? Alabama, Clemson. What do you think?
Man, first of all, I thought Alabama was actually going to run away with it. And to be fair, they got off to a 28-0 start. So, mm-hmm. I mean, it's pretty lopsided. Credit to Oklahoma for even getting back into that game, because they could have just easily just said, all right, we're done. Kyler Murray, we'll see you. Had a great year. Lincoln Riley, thanks for playing. You know, instead, they decided to make a game of it. And really, kind of, I don't want to say had Alabama on the ropes. That's not correct at all. But they certainly were like, oh, you know what? We actually should have belonged in this game. We're here. Let's finish it. Clemson, I don't know what Notre Dame was doing. Didn't belong, but I guess neither did Georgia.
Didn't belong there.
Yeah, Notre Dame didn't belong there. Georgia didn't belong there either, though.
But by the rules, they did.
By the rules, they did.
They did. So by rule, that's who you have.
That's who it is, and they had their great schedule, and they made it, and they were undefeated, and so on and so forth. You know, apparently UCF, you know, didn't belong there either. They couldn't beat LSU.
Well, I will say this, that their dude put the most massive hit on that quarterback during the interception.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. And it didn't get flagged, right?
Did not get flagged. It was a clean block, clean play.
Unbelievable. But that was a hit.
You talk about the national championship. Neil, I don't know, man. I mean, Clemson is playing great football right now. Alabama is playing great football right now. I'd like to think it's a one-score game, maybe 10 points, one way or the other. But I would absolutely be shocked if Alabama lost.
Me too. They just have a way to win big games, and they do it almost all the time.
And even when their defense is struggling, they're offensively gifted. They mm-hmm. just don't. I don't know what their weakness is. I mean, do you know what their weakness is?
No.
Does anybody know what their weakness is? They haven't lost a game yet. I don't know. Like, their running game's good. Their passing game is good. Their defense is good, both at the pass and the rush. I don't know where you find that, like, Gidget in the armor. I don't know.
They don't have a great kicking game.
And that, even that's not bad.
Yeah, it's not bad, but it isn't great. It's not, whoa. They're pretty average.
Yeah.
That's about it.
But even their
the only spot.
Even their field goal kicker has been pretty accurate over the last, like, couple months. So yeah. I don't know. I just don't see how they lose to Clemson when they really have not been, I don't know, pushed all that much this year. And even when they have been pushed, they found a way to win because they don't have any glaring weaknesses.
All right. Only thing NFL-wise, got to give the Titans credit. They didn't make it, but doggone it, they went out and fired their strength coach. So they took immediate action to get things corrected. So that strength coach, that's all she wrote. Keevy, is that Canavy, whatever his name, Tom Canavy, fired. You're out of here. We're not strong enough to win.
I feel like
we'll be strong enough to win next year.
Are you
need to lift more weight?
Are you trolling?
No, not at all. That's what I do.
No, they did.
I don't win. I'm firing the strength coach right out of the gate.
Like, not putting up with it.
Not putting up with it. We're stronger. We win that game.
I feel like the frustration for me was not in the fact that the Titans lost, but that the fan base literally exploded because Marcus Mariota wasn't playing.
Yeah. The problem in that game
exploded.
Was Andrew Luck was playing.
And he's been phenomenal this year.
Against the Titans.
Oh, he's unbeatable.
He's basically the second coming. It doesn't really matter.
No, I literally have
water, wine, whatever. He can do whatever he wants.
He's Christ.
To do. Yeah. But against
and
the Titans.
And he's walking across the water.
He is. Whatever he wants to do, he can do. They can't do anything about it. That was the problem, is that he played.
Well, and he did everything. He's just like he's done for, I don't know, the 10 previous games. He's now 11-0 against the Titans, you know, particularly in clutch situations. His dominance, it's Peyton Manning-esque, and it makes me hate him. I mean, Peyton Manning did the same thing. Peyton Manning's like, whatever. It's the Titans. I could have thrown 4 interceptions last week, and it's all on tape, and they do the same thing.
Omaha!
Doesn't matter.
Touchdown.
Yep. Touchdown. 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 6 touchdowns. Touchdowns. That's all Luck does. And literally, we make, I have said this numerous times, Andrew Luck could go out in a wheelchair. T.Y. Hilton could go out on crutches, and they could both be on the field, and he'd connect for 330 yards, 3 touchdowns, and 8 catches and 170 yards for T.Y. Hilton.
If it's
doesn't
the
matter.
Titans.
If it's the Titans, yeah. They literally, Andrew Luck could be in a wheelchair, and he could just roll one hand out from behind center and chuck a football down the field, and the Titans would be like, we can't get it. It's Andrew Luck. We can't do it. I have said that for like 5 years now. Whatever it is that Andrew Luck has, I don't want to call it even the it factor, but he has been able to just absolutely decimate any game plan that the Titans have ever had against him. We're going to stop the run. All right, cool. Doesn't matter. 330 yards. We're going to stop the pass. Whatever. Still going to throw for 300 yards, and our running game's going to get 150. It just doesn't matter what we do against Andrew Luck, and it really, really frustrates me.
Well, maybe next year, right? We'll see.
I mean, maybe. I mean, that was the other thing, too. I didn't think Blaine Gabbert played all that bad until the fourth quarter when we needed a touchdown, down a score, and he threw an interception. Well, that's, you know, not ideal.
Got one more year. Next year, you might can win it. Then it's Brown's domination for the next decade.
So, right.
There you go.
To be completely fair, I have to admit it, Baker Mayfield might just be...
He's fun. Fun to watch, whether you like him or not, or whether you like the Browns or not. He is fun to watch.
He is fun to watch, and he now is the NFL's record holder for touchdowns as a rookie quarterback. He threw 27.
Good deal. All right, Ed. Enjoy tonight. We'll chat with you next week on another show.
Sounds good.
You have been listening to The Neil Bradley Show, or you have fast-forwarded to this point and skipped the show entirely. Tune in weekdays for The Neil Bradley Show on 1340WNBS.com or subscribe free by searching for The Neil Bradley Show on the iTunes podcast app. The Neil Bradley Show is a presentation of WNBS Sports in conjunction with Forever Communications.